This is the Cascade Hiker Podcast. You're going to find out all the aspects of hiking in our beautiful Pacific Northwest woods.
I'm a country boy with a soft side. My heart wanders up north to the hillside. And I've never met anyone quite as beautiful as you.
Check us out over at CascadeHikerPodcast.com. That's right, CascadeHikerPodcast.com. That's where you're going to find all the show notes and links right there.
Enigmatic like that of the cosmos. Never held your hand, but of course.
I want to thank Whiskey Fever for letting me use that awesome track there. That was Tall Grass off their album, Gonna Wake Up This Whole Town. Find them at ReverbNation.com/Whiskey Fever. They're from Cedro Woolley. Go check them out. I'm your host, Rudy Getzik. I put this podcast together to inspire you to get out on the trail. Are you putting in 2-mile hikes, 5-mile hikes? You sitting on the couch? Have you even gone on a backpacking trip yet? I'm going to introduce you to some folks that have done that and a whole lot more. So without further ado, here is the Cascade Hiker Podcast. All right, next on the Cascade Hiker Podcast, what's your name and where are you from?
Hey, I'm John.
I'm also known as Moosefish, and I live in the Snoqualmie Valley in just outside of Seattle.
All right. Well, where did the name Moosefish come from? How long have you been around?
It's been the name Moosefish has been there since 1998 or so. That's when my wife and I got married, because I'm very old now. And when we were getting – we had a friend who was a designer who was putting together our invitation, and he said that he needed to have a little graphic to put on the back. And so he was asking, so what do you like? And what do you like? And he couldn't come up with anything. And they just asked, what are your favorite animals? And my wife said moose, and I said fish, and kind of got put together there. And I think we spun up a website pretty quick, because I'm a computer nerd, and that's been going on for all that time.
You had to capture that .com, huh?
Well, you know, back then it wasn't that big a deal. The worst part about registering a domain back then was that, you know, it was significantly more expensive than it is today. I mean, like $40-$50 a year, I think. It's, you know, nobody was giving them away for free. In fact, I think NetSolutions or Network Solutions was the only company you could register with.
Oh, wow. And so when did you start writing then for Moosefish as far as the hiking or outdoor world?
Well, you know, I didn't really get into the outdoors until around 2000, when we got our first dog, and I got really sick and tired of walking it around the block. And so started looking around and found trails and roads and places that I could take her out, and we could just run around and be crazy. And before that, I'd just been a fisherman, because that's sort of how I was raised. We never did hiking unless there was a lake or a stream at the end of the trail. So once I started getting into that and I started doing more hiking and more of those sorts of adventures on a really regular basis, that's when I set up, I started publishing just real simple stories. And, you know, probably very silly ones as well. I remember being made fun of by some of my friends at the time before blogging was a thing, because I had complained that, you know, the power had gone out and the chili had been ruined, because that's what I used to talk about. And then there was a sort of a reboot of the website when my daughter was born in 2003. And that's the same system that's been running ever since, and really started getting into trying to spread information about hiking and try to encourage other people to go outside, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And that's what the bulk of that content is there. But, you know, if you look way back in the early times, you find these little tiny trips that I would do. And I, you know, every time I'd walk outside, I'd post a picture up. Because it was before Twitter, and I think it was before I was on Facebook, at least. I never had MySpace or anything like that, and certainly no Instagram.
You created your own social media.
Well, that's too much credit, but yeah. Yes, absolutely, I invented the internet.
Nice. Yeah, exactly.
Nice. So now, right now, today, then, you know, I got on your website, and who all is Moosefish today?
Well, it's me, and I do almost all of the writing. My wife occasionally writes something, but it's pretty rare, and she has her own social media presence that focuses on education and stuff like that. And then I have three kids. There's my oldest daughter is Clara. She's 13. Then I have a daughter named Lillian, who's right in the middle at 11. And then my son is Henry at 9. And then I have a dog who is named Treen, and she is 7. And so that pretty much makes us up. But you know, we've always got people who kind of fade in and out or transition in and out, depending on what it is. There's lots of faces that you'll see, and some fairly frequently in pictures, and they figure heavily in some stories.
That's cool. Yeah, well, you know, actually, it's funny. I was hitting you up, and I believe you're kind of famous on another podcast. Is that true?
I don't know about famous, and certainly not once.
They have an opportunity to talk with
the guys that were doing In Ice Axe We Trust, first about Glacier Peak and a climb that I did there. And then later we talked about, later I met one of the guys down in Arizona, and we climbed Humphreys Peak, which is the highest peak in Arizona. And so he and I and another former guest of the podcast got on, and we talked about that climb because it was a real interesting adventure. You know, I'd never done any high pointing pretty much outside of Washington and Oregon, and this guy drove from California. I think, you know, straight, he arrived at like 4 a.m. and we got up at 5 to go hiking. And then the woman that was with us was from Phoenix, and she had climbed Humphreys many times, but never in the winter. So she had no experience with snow. So crampons and ice axes and all that stuff were brand new to her. So it was a real fun podcast to do because we got to tell a lot of stories.
I thought it was fun too. I listened to it. So in case you're kind of breaking out there, that was In Ice Axe We Trust, and I found it on iTunes there. So.
Yeah, they were still alive. It's still there. I don't think there are any new episodes, unfortunately.
That's good. So you live in the Pacific Northwest, you said. And you mentioned you went to Arizona. Do you go elsewhere? And do you take your family? Because that one sounded like you went by yourself.
Early, before we had kids, we did a lot more adventuring. You know, we did the standard, you know, escape and go to Europe and try that for a little bit, and did a couple little hikes there, just my wife and I. And then before my first daughter was born, we did the same thing in New Zealand. And most of those trips tended to be fishing related. So, you know, we booked guides when we went to New Zealand, or I went with my father to Christmas Island. Since then, it's been much more domestic. So a lot in Washington, obviously. Oregon's so close, it's hard to say no. Fishing and some hiking in Montana and Alaska. And then, you know, whenever we go out on a trip, like we're going to go for a wedding back east to New England, we made sure to build in a couple of opportunities to get outside. I think one day we went and tagged 3 high points in New England, because they're a little different than the high points we have out west.
Yeah.
Not quite as glaciated, typically. In fact, one of the more entertaining ones was Rhode Island, which is Jeremoth Hill. And I think it took us about 5 minutes to walk there from the car. And you could still see the car from the high point. And you can't see, but I'm doing air quotes here for a high point. So, but definitely, you know, I really enjoy going to new places and seeing the difference in the trees and the mountains, you know, and feeling kind of, you know, like back east, it wasn't so much about the terrain as it was the history that was there. We did hikes in Boston along the Freedom Trail, which is paved, sure, but you walk all the way around, and there are different sites. There's you know, Paul Revere's house, and you see the sites of Bunker Hill Battle, and all of those sorts of things are really interesting. Whereas out here in the West, you look around, and last weekend we were up on just outside of Mount Rainier National Park and in a wilderness area, and it was absolutely amazing to be able to contrast that with the experiences that we've had in other places. And you look around and see the entire quarter of the sky is taken up by Mount Rainier and, you know, all of its glaciers. And to think that there are people back east who've never seen that. And at the same time, before I went back this last time, I had never been to any of the Revolutionary sites. So it's really cool to go to these different places and see those different outdoor adventures, I don't know, for lack of a better term.
Yeah. Well, you're passing up the 200-year-old history with the thousands-year-old history here in Washington.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, at the same time, you know, we hear about, like, you know, the historic buildings in Mount Rainier National Park, and maybe they're 100 years old.
Right.
But you go and stand in Paul Revere's house, and, you know, the ceilings are barely, I mean, I'm not a tall guy, but I was close to the top of the ceilings in there, and these tiny little rooms and tiny little doors, and still there and so old. And, you know, it wasn't always preserved. So it was really great to be able to see that, and also to experience the idea that you can drive through four states in one day, which isn't something that we can easily do here in Washington.
Yeah, that sounds like fun. I need to get back east myself more.
I think I'd really like to go and visit, you know, places like Washington, D.C. a little bit more, and maybe more in New Hampshire and up in the White Mountains. Mount Washington would be a blast to go and do. Getting up into Maine, I think, would be really neat as well. I really have sort of this, you know, if I look at a map of the places that I've been and the places I've hiked, there's this big empty hole in the middle of our country where I just haven't gone. I mean, outside of Kentucky, where I have some relatives, I just don't have any reason to go there when there's so many other things around. At the same time, you know, seeing just flat out to the horizon, even though that seems like, you know, it'd be the sort of thing you go, oh, that's going to be so boring, it really holds it's very attractive to me for some reason to see all of these different things.
Yeah. I had a buddy that hiked the, I believe it's called the Ice Age Trail.
Okay.
Is that what it is? I think it's up north in the Midwest there, but.
Sounds like it. Yeah.
He described it that way, you know, just, man, totally different terrain, but awe-inspiring in a whole different way.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Hey, something really easy to do. If you shop at REI, you can click right through my site. It gives a little kickback to me and helps the show out. Gets the show a little credit there. You get all the same prices that REI offers, but I get a little kickback. So thanks a lot. We also do the Amazon. If you shop at Amazon and you want to click through the website, same thing. You get all the same deals. Click through. Just go to the show notes. Check that out. Hey, thanks a lot for supporting the show. Well, hey, back to Washington. What about your kids? You get them out on the trail a lot, obviously, and I've seen some climbing and stuff, at least some introductory stuff. How do they do as far as, you know, pushing them too hard, that kind of thing? I have some kids, and so I always try not to do that. And I think as parents, we try not to do that. But how do they do?
Well, I think that, you know, one of the things that I know that I was so into hiking when they were born that, you know, I have pictures of their very first hike. Each of them got on the trail before they were 2 weeks old in a front pack. And, you know, we just ran up the trail that's pretty close to us up to a little waterfall and had an opportunity to do that. And then I don't think they ever really realized that there was a life that didn't involve hiking. So I've been very lucky to be able to kind of slide them into that lifestyle without letting them have too much of a say. When they were, each of them was three, we did our first backyard camping trip where, you know, we'd camp out in the backyard and the rule was they couldn't come into the house until morning. And then when they were four, then we went on our first backpacking trip with each of them. And the, those first trips are always super short and super easy. And it's all, for me, it's all about setting my expectations for myself so that I can enjoy. I didn't go and climb to the top of some great peak. All I did was, you know, I walked a mile or 2 miles to this little lake and set up camp. But if I think about it from the perspective of I'm going there to expose my kids to the outdoors and kind of making this investment in them so that way they can grow up to be well-adjusted adults, but more importantly, so that they take me hiking when I'm old and gray. You know, that's really what I'm all about when I'm going out with them. And then about when my girls were 9 and 7, I think, we decided that we were going to kind of push a little bit. And so we went up to Summerland in Mount Rainier for a two-night trip. That was the first two-night trip that we'd done. And it was going to be the hardest hike in terms of mileage and elevation gain. And they absolutely stunned and surprised me. They were able to carry their gear. We got up there into Summerland, and it was kind of gray and overcast, and you know, it wasn't super exciting. The views weren't there. We did see some marmots playing around in the snowfield, so that was really great. And you know, we went to bed that night, and I was thinking, gee, you know, are we going to bother to stay? Are they going to want to stay another night? Because that was what our permit was for. And it, morning came, and it was blue sky, and the mountain was just right there, and the snowfield stretched up and around us, and they were both eager and ready to go. And so we, you know, left most of our gear at camp and headed up to Panhandle Gap, which wasn't far or long, but it was a different kind of adventure for them because they hadn't done any real hiking on snow like that before. And ever since then, I mean, that's kind of like where this magic switch got flipped, where they have been able to do and they want to do the kinds of trips that I think if I didn't have kids, I would be planning with adult friends. You know, we'd go out and sure, probably on that trip, we would have gone farther, we would have gone faster or something else. But they're always surprising me in what they can do. I think the biggest difference between them and my adult friends is that they don't go out and want the suffering that sometimes adults want, you know, the type 1 or type 2 fun. They're all about just having fun right now. They don't have to work too hard for it. And so a lot of the trips that I do are really geared toward making sure that there's a huge payoff.
Yeah.
So, you know, we go to rivers or we go to lakes or we go to, you know, a mountain that you pop over the ridge and Mount Rainier is right in your face and you can't help but kind of go slack-jawed in front of it. We've done some really what I would have never thought they were capable of types of trips. When the girls were 9 and 11, we did the High Divide Loop in Olympic National Park. And I think that was like 20-some miles and like 5,000 feet of gain over 3 days. And, you know, they were soldiers. There was some time that wasn't so great in that. You know, we rolled into camp really late the first night. And we were late getting out of camp or getting back to the car on the second night. But in between, you know, some of the memories that are going to keep me smiling, you know, when they've gone off and they have their own families and they don't want to talk to me anymore, those sorts of things. Those are the things that I'm going to think back on. Like last year, I took my son, we went up to Tuck and Robbins Lake in the Alpine Lakes Wilderness. And as that trail, you start and it's like 4 miles of just flat in the woods. There's not a whole lot to see. It was kind of hot. You know, we were doing anything I could to try to keep him engaged. So, you know, every time we'd go across a stream, we'd dip our hats in the water and throw them on our heads. And, you know, so then we had the hat dip became the big thing as we kept going. And we did a little bit of climbing. You know, the trail starts gaining out of once you pass Hyas Lake. And he was starting to whine a little bit. And I was thinking, oh, boy, because this isn't even the hard part of this trail. I was really, really worried. And then we got off of the maintained trail, and the trail up to Tuck Lake is notoriously lousy. And it's loose, and it was dusty, and it was rocks. And he had the time of his life. And it was absolutely not what I expected. And it was just perfect, the way that he kind of came to life when we got off of the boring, nice trail. And, you know, we had to scramble a little bit and play around. So, you know, I push them just enough to hopefully make sure that they're not getting stuck where they only think they can go. But at the same time, you have to really kind of know your boundaries and your kids' boundaries so that you don't go too far and turn it into, you know, the typical death march, which I've done on occasion as well. You know, and sometimes the death march is what you really need. You don't usually realize that you're on that kind of a trip until, you know, you're 5 miles away from the car and you turn to go home and the kids just kind of deflate and they don't have it in them anymore. And then you go, okay, it's going to be like 5 hours of walking slowly and maybe some cajoling and maybe some bribing with M&Ms or special hiking bites. You know, that's what we always called the M&Ms and Skittles and Swedish Fish and stuff like that.
That's good. Well, and it's important too for parents. I mean, because I've been there too with the slack jaw for a different reason, right? That just, 5 miles, you know,
yep.
Just, I mean, man,
yep.
You know, there's two different styles there. So besides the bites that you, the hiking bites that you bring, is there a certain items that you bring when you just take your kids out for backpacking?
Well, I think that we always have a can of Pringles
or two. I think in most of the backpacking pictures that I have on the way out, you know, they've got the tubes or strapped to the outside of their packs. Pringles are great because, you know, on the way out, they don't crush. They can eat them and it, you know, they don't get that at home. And then on the way back, you got a great place to pack your garbage. So usually Pringles. For some reason, they only want to eat Mountain House macaroni and cheese while we're out on the trail. So oftentimes, you know, if we're going to be gone for 3 nights, they're eating macaroni and cheese for 3 nights in a row. And hot dogs and stuff like that. The last time when I went up to Tuck and Robin with my son, we threw in some books. You know, I hadn't really expected that we were going to need to do that. And we got up there and I got out my book, because we were going to have a kind of chill afternoon. And he said, well, I forgot my book. I'm like, oh, okay. He's like, well, why don't you read me your book? I thought, okay, yeah, okay, I could do this. And it was The Martian. And so I thought, you know, okay, so maybe I'll have to just be a little aware of what I'm reading to make sure I don't expose him to any colorful metaphors that he maybe shouldn't hear yet. And it's not like 4 words in and you hit the first one. I had to pause and worked over it. And then I got really good at skipping over all of those little pieces of language and some of the concepts as well. And so that was kind of neat. I think we'll probably continue to bring books. I think it was really fun to be able to read out loud back and forth, you know, as opposed to just kind of sitting and doing that idly. We usually have a deck of cards. They love to try to beat me in war, which, you know, is a game that can go on forever. I have another great memory of sitting on the top of Alta Mountain in the north of Snoqualmie Pass, and my son had me down to 2 cards, and one of them was an ace, and I won the next battle, and I came all the way back and beat him. And so I make sure that he remembers that. So that, you know, the lesson, I guess, let's see what there's got to be a lesson. So the lesson is to never give up something like that. I think that one of the things that I do always carry when I'm out with the kids, and this is even just on relatively short hikes, after that high divide trip, when I came home late And in fact, we were 3 or so hours past the time I told my wife we'd be back in the car and going again. So she was a little concerned, I think is probably a nice way to say it. But after that, I got a DeLorme InReach. So that way, you know, it's a satellite messenger. And you can do two-way texting on it. And so for a price, I would have been able to tell her, yes, we are all great and okay. We're just running a little late. So now on all of those trips that I take the kids on, whether they're overnights or just, you know, day hikes, if we're going to be out of cell range on the phone, then I always have that with me. And then I also always take it with me when I'm out hiking by myself, even if it's a trail that I've done a ton of times before, because things happen. I mean, there's a monthly charge to it, and you can't send all of the texts that you might want, but I don't really want to be sending texts when I'm out there unless I need to.
Right.
So,
well, you know, my episode 17 of my podcast I just released, and that was with the Seattle Mountain Rescue.
Yeah.
And honestly, that was one of their suggestions was, why not? You know, why not have one of these? Because if you need help, you need help. Or if you don't, you know, you can get that message out too. So,
absolutely. You know, I mean, I looked at a whole bunch of the different items or the different models that are out there. You know, you get the PLBs, which are, you know, there's nothing except a holy cow, I need help right now. Send the artillery or the cavalry, I guess. Or the spots that do the tracking and do one-way communications or everything else. And we wound up settling on the DeLorme InReach because it is both it's two-way texting, and more importantly, you can do it without attaching a phone to it, right? So like Spot has a two-way messenger, but your phone has to be functional and has to have a battery on it so that it can communicate to configure the texts. But, or at least at the time, that was the case. And with the InReach, you know, you can very painfully get a message out using just the couple buttons that it has on the screen. And that was really important to us. I think it is probably the most expensive on a month-to-month basis. But, you know, the peace of mind that I have given to my wife, knowing where I am and being able to see, you know, am I close to a trailhead? Have I not moved for the last 3 hours? Yeah, those are the sorts of things that really make that a worthwhile device.
That's cool. Yeah, that's some great items, some good suggestions. I'm actually going on my first backpacking trip with my 7-year-old daughter this weekend. So one of the items that you mentioned was a book, and that's exactly was one of my lists was, you know, us bringing a couple books. But you mentioned a couple other things there I need to catch up on. So,
yeah, you know, I mean, whenever we go out with the kids, and even, you know, if I'm just going out by myself or with my adult friends, my philosophy is that I'm going to be safe and I'm going to have fun. And if I get where I'm trying to go, that's even better. You know, and I have all kinds of failures on the trail, if you want to call them that. But some of my most The moments I'm most proud of are when I can shut down the summit fever. Twice on Hood, you know, the first time we climbed up, we got to the Hog's Back, and there were tons of people there, and we ran into a guide that we knew, and he said he was taking his clients back, and they hadn't summited because there was big chunks of ice falling through the pearly gates. And we said, you know what? It's Hood. We'd love to get up there. It's blue skies. It looks great. But today we're going to turn around and we're going to go home. And so we did. And then a couple years later, I went back and we got beyond the pearly gates and we got up to the top of the old chutes. And the wind was gusting at 40 miles an hour. And it was kind of this way and then that way. And to get from where we were to the true summit, which couldn't have been more than, you know, 10 or 20 feet higher than where we were, we would have had to walk along this knife ridge. And on one side, it was way down. And it was not the sort of thing that you would survive. And we just, the three of us, we didn't even talk about it. It's just like, yep, this is good for me. So, you know, the safety thing really is a big deal for me. In my non-hiking life, I do a lot with risk, and I've been able to translate that into my outdoor adventures where I can use those same kinds of concepts and say, you know, the likelihood of something bad happening here is probably pretty low, but the impact of something bad happening is huge. You know, I'm not probably going to fall off this mountain, but if I do, that's it. I'm done. So that's not a risk I'm willing to take. So really trying to instill that in my kids as well. And may have done too good a job on my oldest daughter. She tends to be a little bit more conservative. My son, I don't know if it's because he's a boy or because he's 9, but he'll do anything, even the craziest things that I would never think are good ideas. And then my middle daughter, she's, you know, kind of right in between the two. And she's got a real good, sensible head on her.
Yeah, that's good. So you got some climbing experience, some hiking experience. Can you start out with your climbing? What's some of your, you know, hang your hat on climbs you've done, and, you know, talk about a couple of your favorite hiking or backpacking trips too?
Yeah, well, you know, when I was 35, way back when, we were sitting down at dinner, my wife and I, and she says, "So what do you want to do by the time you're 40? And you know, I hadn't really thought about it because I was still in my 30s. I didn't need to think about that. It was way far away. So we talked around and decided that, oh yeah, by the time I'm 40, I'm going to climb all the Washington volcanoes. And so we decided that that was what we were going to, what was going to happen. And over the next 5 years, you know, I started with Mount Adams and had a great day up there. You know, beautiful weather, an amazing sunset from the lunch counter, where, you know, the clouds were below us and they turned the reds and purples, and Mount St. Helens is silhouetted. It was just unbelievable. And and standing, you know, at 12,000 feet, which at that time was the highest I'd ever been, was almost transcendent. And it's probably just the lack of oxygen. But, you know, for whatever reason, it was it really grabbed me. And then, you know, a little while later, we climbed Mount St. Helens. That was a great trip because, you know, we'd look over the crater edge and kind of feel like you see the earth changing right in front of you. And there's smoke coming out, steam coming out of the vents, and that was amazing. And then in 2010, I climbed Mount Rainier. And in all of these climbs, and much of the, you know, I guess the day-to-day hiking that I do, is with a real good friend of mine named Scott, and he was with me on all five of these volcanoes, and we went up on Mount Rainier, the two of us, and then two of our other friends on a rope, and even though it was hard, and it was a lot of the time felt like we were just sort of walking for hours in the dark, because, you know, you start at midnight or 2 a.m. or whenever it is, and you can't see anything. You got your headlamp that shows you the rope in front of you, and sometimes you pass another rope team, and maybe you say hi, but I was far enough away from my friends that I couldn't talk to them as we're climbing up, and I think it took us about 9 hours to get from Camp Sherman to the summit, and then we didn't even stay for more than a few moments. Because one of our guys was starting to feel a little bit of frostbite, and so we turned off and headed down. But what I remember most about that was the day seemed so perfect, and as we're climbing, you know, every once in a while you'd sit down, take a rest, or kneel down. And at one point, for some whatever reason, I was looking at my backpack, and I put my head real close down to the snow because I was looking for something. And it was like somebody had a sandblaster against my helmet. And I hadn't realized this whole time we'd been climbing, this, you know, just a huge wind, right? Just the foot above the snow was just moving like crazy. And you know, as we're climbing, I didn't use headphones or anything like that. And I remember the sound of the ice axe as it went into the, you know, the wasn't really ice. It was more like just a really hard styrofoam snow, and it kind of goes every time. And it's those are the sorts of memories that really make me think back to that and say, you know what, I'm going to go back and I'm going to do it again. And hopefully, you know, I'll be lucky enough and my kids will want to go and I'll still be in a decent enough shape that I'll be able to go. But you know, that's kind of the volcanoes and the big climbs. And then for backpacking trips, you know, I mean, the very first ones that I did with the kids, were all real special to me. They're all real short and we did them with friends because I've always found that, you know, taking friends with your kids is a great way. Sometimes they want to show off and sometimes they just don't want to be with you. And, you know, we had an opportunity, it's also nice, you know, when you have some other adult that's at least somewhat as responsible as you, to be there. And usually actually those adults are probably more responsible than I am.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they're my backup. You know, if I fall into a hole, I'm not leaving a couple of 4-year-olds standing in the snow going, what do we do now? before I had kids and even a little bit after, you know, I did a couple of sections on the PCT. Those were a lot of fun. I remember getting terrible, terrible blisters, that I finally resolved with, toe socks. So that's my saving grace. Toe socks and big foot box shoes are the ones that keep me from having blisters like that again. But we did a couple of the sections on the PCT and, every once in a while I get the itch and I'm like, oh yeah, you know, I should totally quit my job and go do it again and do the whole thing. And I know that's never going to happen, but maybe my kids will want to go and, you know, after college or after high school or something, they'll take a summer and they'll go do it and I'll go and support them and, have an opportunity to do a couple more sections. Cause I think that would be a lot of fun.
That's cool. Yeah. You know, you mentioned the friends with the kids on their first backpacking trip. And, my daughter and I are going on our first trip this weekend. And I interviewed, episode 5 was, Jessie Lorett. She's the outdoor writer for the Everett Herald.
Yeah.
And she has a daughter about the same age as mine. So we're going up together. So that should be pretty cool. So, first backpacking trip for both of us, both of the daughters. So that should be pretty cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be great.
It is good. And, you know, it's great that you mentioned that because getting other kids with kids, I think the biggest question people have is, oh, how do I get my kids interested in going out? And that's the number one answer. It's getting other kids that will inspire your kids to go if you have that problem.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I found has been so helpful is just, you know, it sounds so cheesy, but modeling my love for the outdoors for them. And they can clearly see that, you know, if I'm getting ready to go or I just come back from being out, there's a glow that's there that it's hard to replicate. You know, and I get probably a little cranky if I'm not going out hiking often enough. So it's by showing them how much I care, I think that they probably on some subconscious level understand that there's something valuable there. And maybe they don't get it always and it doesn't really resonate, but at least it's in their awareness. And certainly, you know, I feel really lucky that I've got 3 kids who love going out and love being out there and trying new things like that.
Cool. Well, with your kids or without your kids, do you have any scary stories on the trail?
Well, you know, I mean, nothing like, you know, bear attack or anything like that. I guess that, well, actually, so the closest that I had to a bear encounter was in Mount Rainier Park. My son was 5, I guess, and we had camped at Snow Lake. Right, so if you don't know, Snow Lake is a super short hike to this beautiful lake just on the Paradise side of Rainier. And we were hiking out the next morning, and it was probably, I don't know, maybe 10 o'clock in the morning or so. And we're walking through this meadow, and there's, you know, the trail goes kind of straight through. It's maybe 20 yards long, and there's a wall of brush that was on our left. And as we're walking, my son and his 5-year-old friend are at the other end of this meadow, and my buddy and I are walking and following them up, and we hear something move in the brush right to our left, and we kind of jump off the trail, and there's a bear right off the trail. And, you know, it didn't sink in, and it wasn't scary at the moment, because I didn't put it together that my son had just walked by that bear, and had the bear wanted to, it would have been over. In fact, I was so caught up in the moment that I think I said something like, you know, hang on, I'm going to go after it. As it, you know, it was moving away through the brush, and I'm getting out my camera and I'm jumping in there after it, because I'm going to get the excellent picture. And it wasn't, you know, it was a few minutes later, you know, I'm kind of standing there after retreating, because the bear stood up on his hind legs and looked back at us and thought, okay, this is a really bad idea. And boy, this was actually a really scary event. My middle daughter, or I guess my younger daughter, Lillian, she's had some great luck having sort of epic spills on trail. You know, we're out here in the Snoqualmie Valley. There's a Snoqualmie Forest, which has been run by Weyerhaeuser and Hancock, and now it's owned by Campbell. It's a tree farm. And they let you go back in there if you have a permit and things like that. And so we were going around and just kind of tagging all of these little peaks that were back there that didn't even have names, and there's no trails up them. So, you know, we'd drive as close as we could, and then we'd just make a beeline for the summit and spend a day out there wandering around in the ferns. And I think my daughter, she was probably 5, maybe 6, and we're charging up this hill, and I was looking at somebody, one of the other kids, or maybe the dog or whatever else. And I look back, and she's doing backward somersaults down the hill. And she came to rest in the crook of this tree. And just kind of like, that was bad. And, you know, we fixed it with M&Ms and went on a little bit more. And I don't think we actually summited that one. But those are the sorts of scary stories that seem to happen to me on a semi-regular basis. Or I do something stupid, like, you know, there's some trails that are, I do them all the time. They're more training than anything else. So I listen to podcasts or whatever as I'm running up and down these trails. And I was listening to a podcast from Stuff You Should Know, and they were telling the true story of the Pied Piper. And it turned out that I want to say that in the story, he was a really creepy guy, and he was luring the children away, and it was just terrifying, and it scared me to death as I'm out there around dusk on this trail thinking, oh man, there are really bad people out there that do terrible, terrible things. And nothing came of it, of course. I got home, everything's fine, the kids are fine, life's fine. It just, you know, things like that. That's what tends to kind of creep me out or scare me when I'm out there.
Yeah, I've had those moments by myself on the trail before, just kind of, ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Those little moments. I love Stuff You Should Know, too, by the way.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's a great podcast, and it always seems like there's something there that I want to hear about. And I think my wife's probably getting tired of me telling her all about the, hey, you're never going to guess what I just learned about. She's like, oh, great. Now what was it?
My wife hates podcasts.
You know, I remember back in the day when I used to go to the gym on a regular basis, I would get so bored listening to music and doing nothing. And
over
that's,
and over and over.
Yeah, again. You know, and it's like, okay, great. You know, I mean, I love these bands, but I don't want to listen to them anymore. And that's when I kind of got into podcasts. And so I've got enough that even when I am, you know, I have about a mile walk to and from the bus every day going to work, and If I'm out on a trail that I've done a lot, I'll plug in and I can still, you know, I've always got something on my phone that I haven't listened to. And there's always new podcasts coming out that have been very, it's just been a lot of fun to kind of learn new things and to find new stories.
Oh, for sure. No, podcasts are amazing. Yeah. Well, what about any funny stories? Are they the same ones or do you have something else?
Well, yeah, certainly we all look back on my daughter rolling down the hill backwards and kind of laugh now.
Scary funny,
Yeah, I mean, I think some of them are just kind of weird. You know, when we were coming off of Glacier Peak, we came up to the PCT right around White Pass, and we came around a corner, and there was another hiker in front of us who was mid-poop. And we kind of backed away, and, you know, that became the joke for the rest of the trip. And, you know, things like that. Or I have a great video from when my son must have been 2, maybe. And you know, he's loved getting out of the backpack and running around and doing things like that. And so we were up on, you know, just some local little hill, and he was running down a hill, and my girls were running after him, and I was running after them. And he just did a header into the ditch on the side. And my daughter gets to him first and kind of looks at him. She turns back to me. And I'm still taping everything or recording everything. Right. And she screams out, "Henry ate dirt." You know, so it's things like that. Those become the stories that we look back on in retrospect. I'm like, I remember that time you ate dirt. And he's like, "Yeah, I know I ate dirt. That's great. Thanks, Dad."
I think about that too. You know, when you talk about the camera, because I've been on, my wife doesn't hike as much. In fact, she hates hiking as much as she hates podcasts. But, you know, she'll come out. She gets out there. And a lot of times she'll be like, "Hey, so is this what you know, let the girls do when you're taking pictures? You know, is there in some like precarious situation, like you with the bear, you know, or something?"
Well, you know, there's always that moment when you see something and you're like, you should not be doing that, but let me take a picture first. And then you got to get down, or you're not in mortal danger right now, so I think I can get a picture off before something bad happens.
Yeah.
You know, the funny inside joke in our family is, you know, the hashtag don't tell mom, right? You know, here I am. I post something on Instagram. I know that she follows me on Instagram. She's gonna see it. And I just love that idea that, it's a secret. We don't tell her about these sorts of things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a whole nother world out there. So do you plan far in advance for your hikes, or you just kind of wing it?
You know, I wish that I had better planning in advance. I find that the weather being what it is, usually if I've got a weekend where I know that we're going to go out and do something, then I'll have a west side and an east side option. All right. So a couple of weeks ago, we were hoping to go do something down by Rainier, but the weather on the west side was terrible. So instead we went east, over by Ellensburg, and did the Umtanum Canyon and waterfall, which was just absolutely perfect for a spring hike when it's raining over here. You know, blue skies, not too hot, not too cold, waterfalls. We had a great time.
Nice.
Typically, I think what I have a tendency to do is know that we're going to go on a trip sometime this summer, right? And here we are at the beginning of summer. I mean, officially, we're in summer now. And I know that there's going to be two-night trips, at least, with the kids this summer. And I think they're going to be up in the North Cascades, but I don't know specific dates, and I don't know specifically where we're going to go. But we've been to all the other – well, we've been to the other major parks in Washington. And we haven't done anything, or we haven't done much up in the North Cascades. So I'd really like to get out there and do some of the iconic things that really kind of make that up. So, you know, I wish that for the bigger trips, I had the ability to do more planning. But I'm the kind of guy that, you know, I don't go out on those kinds of trips as often as I'd like. So I want to make sure that the conditions are just right when I do invest that kind of time. Now, on the flip side, I have a bunch of friends, and we go out every Thursday night during daylight saving time, generally. And we have a schedule that we have established. And it's like, okay, this day we're going to be here, this day we're going to be here, this day we're going to be here. And so that's one where I know on some Thursday in September where I will likely be. And so that brings a little bit of predictability, which is nice to have that. And I think maybe if the weather was better, I'd be a little bit more of a planner like that. I'd say, yep, on this weekend, we're going to be in the North Cascades and we're going to be here with these permits and we're going to go off and do that sort of stuff. I've never had the opportunity to test my luck with weather and permitting where, I've never been granted the opportunity to go up and camp in the enchantments. I enter the lottery every year, but I never win. Even some of the trips through Rainier where you have to get permits ahead of time, we've not necessarily gotten them way ahead of time. We've kind of snuck in on some of those walk-ups.
Well, you mentioned that you had a couple weekends with your kids, but what about you? Do you have anything planned this summer? Any goals?
Well, I always have goals. I'm one of those guys that's going, okay, I got my checklist of things I want to do. And, you know, by the time I turned 40, I had climbed all the Washington volcanoes. And so now in the 10 years between there and when I turn 50, I'm shooting for all the Cascade volcanoes. Mm-hmm. So that adds a whole bunch in Oregon, a couple in California, and I think one or maybe two up in Canada. I've made only the tiniest of little dents in that list on some of the easier ones, you know. And a lot of that I think is because those are trips that the kids can't necessarily go on. And I don't tend to do trips where I just go by myself to go and do something, or I don't take multiple days to go do something with my friends. Most of our overnight trips are tied into visiting family down in Oregon, or we were really lucky to be invited to go to the Deuter Ambassador Summit in Colorado this year, and had a great time hiking in Rocky Mountain National Park where I'd never been before. And so that was a lot of fun. But those are the kinds of trips that we do. Longer term, my older daughter has been talking a lot about long distance hiking, about the PCT. She's really keen on the Wonderland right now. We haven't talked a lot about the Timberline Trail around Mount Hood, but I think that's the perfect kind of get ready for the Wonderland kind of trail. And she's at that age, she's 13 now, where, you know, she's only got 5 or so more years where she's going to be at home predictably. And there might be a time where we actually go out and do that. And you know, I'd love to do it with all the kids, but if she's the only one that wants to do it or can do it or is in shape enough to do it, then that's fine too. But those are kind of, you know, if I look at it, I'm like, okay, the volcanoes and the Wonderland and the Timberline, and let's throw in Mount Olympus there too. Yeah. I think that's plenty probably for what I have left in me.
So what about your 9-year-old and 11-year-old? Have they, had any goals or anything like that?
Well, my 9-year-old still wants to be a ninja. So he goes to Taekwondo 3 times a week, and he's doing all of that. I think that with the exception of getting his black belt, he's not really goal-oriented like that. He loves going out. He loves doing stuff. He loves going, you know, we're going to go fishing this weekend and probably ride some horses. And he's totally excited for that and really looking forward to spending time with his grandfather and me and going out there and playing around. But he doesn't look up at the mountains and go, yes, I want to climb that one and that one and that one. My younger daughter, who's 11, she definitely has some of those tendencies that I think are going to develop into, I want to go and do these kinds of adventures. But they haven't really manifested themselves in the same way that they have for my oldest daughter. And it's really only been in the last year that she's kind of said, okay, now my older daughter has really said, these are my goals. I want to do this. I want to do this. And those sorts of things.
That's really cool. That's like, you know, just such a, you know, you plan for that basically, right?
Well, you hope for that and you pray for that.
Yeah.
That it's going to happen. And, you know, I think that one of the dangers is that we try to make it happen. And oftentimes that can get in the way of letting it happen as it's going to. And if it never happens, you know, that's what grandkids are for, right? I'll take anybody out.
That's right. We're
dog sitting for some friends, and I took their dog. We went out hiking, and so I'm happy to go with anybody, anytime I'm free. You know, whether it's a Thursday night or it's a, you know, early Sunday morning. That's the other time that I usually go out. I try to be on the trail by 6 a.m. And they're all just local trails, and I've done them all because there aren't a whole lot that I haven't done up and down the I-90 corridor out here. But they're all, you know, they all have their special thing. And even if the trail is one that I've been on a ton of times before, it's still something, there's something unique about every experience. You know, if I'm on Granite Mountain, you know, the berries are out, or there's you know, deer in the meadow, or there's ice everywhere and I wasn't expecting ice, or the clouds are filling the valley down below. And each one of those kind of just adds to the story of that trail and all of the different times that I've been lucky enough to experience it.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that's, you know, I've interviewed some people that have hiked the PCT or plan on it, or you know, I've even talked to just a lot of people on the internet that are hiking the PCT or whatever. And it seems like none of them pick Washington as their favorite portion of the PCT, because by the time they get here, all the wildflowers are dead. It's, you know, just about snowing and, you know, horrible weather. So, you know, it's pretty neat to experience it in all its fashions like that, you know?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, I would not want to try to go. You know, we did the section of the PCT from Rainy Pass up to the border. And back then, you could still cross the border, you know, by just filling out a visa to get into Canada. And then, you know, if you were going to stay there for, I think, more than a couple days, you had to go and register with a Mountie someplace. So that was really kind of neat. But doing that at any time other than the time that we happened to hit it, where there was just enough water and it was not raining, I can't imagine trying to do it late in the season where it's hot or when it is buried in feet of snow. I mean, I read about the, I want to say his name was, the trail name was like Pepper or somebody else, that two of them did the PCT in winter on a through hike.
Yeah, trauma. And,
yeah. And I mean, that just blows my mind. I'm done after, you know, 5-6 miles on snowshoes. I can't imagine trying to do that kind of distance day in, day out, and being cold all the time. So people who get up here and have to deal with Washington when it's not at its peak, they're really, it's unfortunate that they go away with less than a true depiction of what it really is. Or maybe it's better. You know, I mean, we've got plenty of people on our trails right now. And I don't know how many more we can take, even though I think it's a really great thing. The more people we have on the trails, the more people are going to stand up for the trails and help protect them and do work on them and all of that. So access is so important, and I won't deny that I grumble a little bit when I'm, you know, if I'm standing on Mailbox Peak and there's a train of people coming up, or I'm down at the bottom and there's cars are everywhere in the parking lot and I can't even find a place to park, because I'm part of that too. So,
well, that's why you said you go out at 6 a.m.
It is absolutely. You know, there's very few other people who are, I don't know if it's smart enough or crazy enough or stupid enough, but yeah, not a whole lot of people show up at 6 a.m, especially in the wintertime, to get up on Mailbox. But I get the summit to myself, and then I see pictures from later in the day where there's 50 people on the summit, and I just can't even imagine it.
That's crazy. Well, that's another thing that in episode 17, where I talked to the Seattle Mountain Rescue. Well, they talked about mailbox. They talked about Psy and rattlesnake, and you know, just talked about the more people, the more accidents. You know, and so
absolutely.
What about books? Do you listen or read any books? The outdoor books.
You know, I was thinking about, you know, what kind of books do I typically have, and it's unfortunate I'm not as big a reader as I used to be, and most of the stuff that I read is trashy sci-fi, you know, like The Martian or Seven Eves or something like that. But there are a couple books that kind of jump out. It's like, you know, all of the Becky books, the Fred Becky books, are just they really tell the story of climbing in the Northwest, and it's not prose. It's not a story, but you look at it and you see these routes that were put up over time, and you know, it's almost like you have to have those books on your shelf, even if you never open them. You just need to have them because they're a part of the community of being outside in the Northwest. One of the first outdoor books that really spoke to me was A River Runs Through It, which, you know, was sort of all about fishing, and I was into fishing at that time, and it was in Montana, and you know, we knew the places that they were talking about in the book, and I think actually maybe it may have been that on one of these trips to Montana with my parents that they read it to us as we were driving in a motorhome across Washington at probably like 40 miles an hour.
Oh man.
Back before everybody had to be belted in, you know, I'd be sitting in between the two seats in the front and they'd be just reading and we'd be doing that. So that one still speaks to me. There's a book called The River Why, which again is, it kind of presents as a fishing book, but it's definitely more philosophical.
It's like the question why.
Yeah.
Letter why.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think it's, I don't know. Now that I think about it, I think it's probably the word why, why.
Okay.
But it's definitely the river why, and it's kind of a deep thinking book and feeling book. And then one that's much more practical, at least if you're going to get a dog, it's a really weird one. It's by the Monks of New Skeet, and it's called The Art of Raising a Puppy. And we got our first dog was named Tokol. She was a little yellow lab that we picked out, and you know, we got her when she was 8 weeks old, and we didn't have kids, so we were able to, you know, go to puppy class every week, and we trained her, and we did all this, and we followed all the stuff in that book, and it worked brilliantly for us. And you know, I mean, everything from they talk about something called the puppy aptitude test, where you take a tiny little puppy and you kind of, you know, you hold them in one hand so that their legs kind of hang down over the sides of your hand, and you see how long they squirm. And that's a really good indicator of whether they're going to be a very dominant dog or whether they're going to be a very submissive dog. Because the quicker they give up and they're like, all right, I guess I'm here, then that tends to be a much more submissive dog.
Wow.
And so it was a really cool book. They have another book that's called How to Be Your Dog's Best Friend, that's really geared more towards adult dogs, and how you can care for them. But this is the Monks of New Skeet, I think it's in New York or someplace like that, but they train, I think, German Shepherds. And it's a lot of it's that tribal knowledge or the institutional knowledge that they've developed over years and years of raising these dogs and producing them like that. So, and then, you know, I'd love to say that I used it on our second dog, his name's Trine, but she was a reject, or I guess not a reject, maybe that's too harsh. She was not up to snuff for being a service dog. So she was raised and trained and fully... the puppy raisers did an amazing job where she would turn on lights, and she could pick up socks and put them in the dryer types of thing. And but she was only able to sit under a table for like 6 hours without moving, but she had to do it for 8.
Wow.
And so she had too much energy. And so she failed out of school, and they sent her home, and we happened to know them. And our other dog, Tokel, was getting a little older, and so she was a perfect addition. And I look back at some of the pictures from when we first got her, and she was so skinny and looked so young. And now she's just this bulk of muscle and long, and you know, she just looks more like a mountain dog now rather than somebody that you would expect to see, you know, running around with a vest on or something like that.
Evolution.
Yep.
Of the dog. Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I actually was just kind of talking to somebody online that is starting a southbound Pacific Crest Trail attempt, and she is going to be hiking with her service dog. And I thought, that's really interesting. So I'm going to try to hook up with her.
Definitely.
Get a little interview. Yeah. Sounded pretty interesting.
We've had it's been a great opportunity for us to really get to know the value of service dogs, and you know, whether they're guide dogs for the blind or ours is a it's called CCI, it's Canine Companions International, I think. But just the infrastructure that goes into raising and training a dog like this, and the fact that many of these organizations do it completely for free, is absolutely amazing. And then we see some of the stories that of the lives that they change. You know, I mean, our dog definitely has changed our life. My first dog even changed my life. But when we see these people who are facing all kinds of challenges, and the service dog can help with some of those challenges and then just be there, is really amazing and impactful.
Even if only for 6 hours.
Yeah, exactly, right? Because then she's got to get up and go to the bathroom or stretch her legs. Oh, how could it be?
It's the time of the podcast that we ask our guests some questions. They don't know these questions. They've never heard them before. So let's see what they have to answer. But first, let's talk about Cascade Hiker hats and bumper stickers. Go to CascadeHikerPodcast.com. Check out the hats and bumper stickers. Support the podcast. You can also donate. There's a donate button on each of our show notes. Go there, find pictures of our guests. Now enjoy the rest of the show. If you could put a sign on any trail, maybe at the start, somewhere in the middle, what would that sign say to hikers?
I think what I would
say, what would be on the sign is, be safe, have fun, and get where you're going.
That's good. Do you filter all of your water on the trail?
You know, I do. I'm terribly
paranoid about that. My first dog did get Giardia, and it was
the most disgusting experience of my entire life, and I've had 3 kids. And I would not wish that on anybody, and certainly would never want to see that for my kids either. So we have a Platypus Gravity Works filter, just like the 2 liter container size, and that works amazingly well, where you can just fill it up and hang it, and you know, there's no pumping or anything like that. And then I also carry a Life Straw. It's just part of my emergency kit that goes with us always, so that way I know that no matter what happens, if I can find standing water somewhere or running water, that I'll be able to have clean water.
That's good. Oh, and that's really interesting you mentioned that about the dog, because I don't think a lot of people think about that.
Oh yeah, it was epically bad. And you know, it's not like we had gone anywhere crazy. And we live on a river, and sure, she just drank out of the river. And for whatever reason, that it triggered. She had it when she was, maybe a year old. And then we didn't do anything differently for her, and she never got it again. I don't think that's that's not an endorsement of get it once and then you'll never have it again. But, you know, it worked for her, and we haven't changed anything about the way that our dog now drinks out of water, and she hasn't got sick, so I don't know what happened there.
Interesting. What about trekking poles, and what about your kids with trekking poles?
So I love trekking poles. I am a big fan since one of my early times on the PCT where I was just dying, and trekking poles saved me going up. I work my arms real hard so that way I can, almost pull myself or push myself up. Coming down, I use them to reduce knee strain. Balance is super important. I think that for my kids, trekking poles tend to be a little annoying because they want to use them and then they don't want to use them.
Yeah.
They want to use them, they don't want to use them. All right. And until they get better about actually keeping them on their own backpack, I'm constantly, I'll be carrying three sets of trekking poles and I'm not able to use my own set because they don't want to use theirs. Early on, they also referred to them not as poles, but as pokes, because they would poke everything with those poles. But perhaps the best story was when I think my daughter may have been three, we were in Rainier again, and we were going towards Frozen Lake, which is right out of Sunrise. It's a beautiful little trip. It's like the number one place I recommend to tell people to go. And she was drawing X's in the trail with her trekking pole. And eventually I'm like, what exactly is it that you're doing? She's like, oh, this is where the buried treasure is now. So she'd obviously been watching a little bit too much Pirates and decided that she was going to make somebody rich.
Or make them try to dig for it.
That would have been bad because it was right in the middle of the trail. I don't know if you're part of the whole trekking pole versus ice axe debate. On that Humphreys Peak trip that I did with the guy from California, the guy from In Ice Axe We Trust.
Right.
He's on Team Ice Axe. I've always thought of myself as more of a team trekking pole kind of guy. And I had trekking poles and an ice axe on that trip. And we had to cross a talus field that was covered in snow. And I was able to find the holes with my trekking poles. And he wound up knee deep a couple times. So, I think definitely there's a place for both tools, but trekking poles are my go-to.
Yeah, for sure. So tell us about a couple of those podcasts you listen to. Do you listen to any outdoor podcasts?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Of course, I listened to this one, and really I did, even before you contacted me. I think most people that listen to outdoor podcasts probably also listen to The Trail Show. It's a great, great podcast, outdoors. I don't know how it's going to go with, one of the guests is no longer on it, but we'll see how that goes.
Mags, yeah.
Yeah. There's a great one from New Hampshire Public Radio called Inside Out.
Hmm.
And they kind of, it's not really hiking, but it's all about how the outside influences us. And they did a story on, there's a great big game reserve in New Hampshire that's totally private and totally closed. And it was totally mesmerizing to listen to this. So I really like that one. Outside Magazine just started one called Science of Survival.
Interesting.
And that one's really neat because they talk about stuff like, they did a couple on dehydration. And there's place called the Devil's Highway, I think, that's in Arizona or New Mexico, and obviously I should pay more attention, but it's one of the routes that immigrants use to get across the border. And even back in prospector times, there are stories about how people would go off into the desert and some of them would live for like 7 days and be so close to death. And in fact, I guess one of the seminal papers on the effects of dehydration was written based on somebody who was being nursed back to health after having been lost out there.
Wow.
So that's a new one that I've just found. I really like it. The Dirtbag Diaries is a great one. It's a little bit more climbing oriented, I think, and that's not really an area that I do a lot, like sport climbing or trad climbing or anything like that. But I like that one because it's a little more philosophical. And then I'm kind of trying out a new one called the First 40 Miles, and I kind of go back and forth on it. It seems pretty cool. I've only listened to a couple episodes. They did have a dad hiker on there, which I thought was cool. I love hearing about other parents who get their kids out. And then I've got a whole nother collection of information security podcasts that I listen to, and then there's the Stuff You Should Know and The Moth and all that sort of stuff as well.
Oh, that's cool. Sounds like a real rounded stuff. I've been listening to the First 40 Miles too. It's very introductory podcast, but they've got a lot of good information. Some of it if you've been hiking for a long time, it's kind of like, okay, yeah, okay. But they do a great job. I think it's well produced, and
absolutely.
I've been trying to get Heather and I can't remember his name right now, but I'm trying to get them on. We've been talking back and forth, but and then the Dirtbag Diaries. One thing I wanted to note on that, since we've been talking a lot about kids, I think one of their more recent episodes, they were talking about the fact that the national parks. I believe it was for that podcast, but they were talking about the national parks started this whole fourth graders get into national parks for free.
Yep.
Because they were honestly just not seeing any kids in the parks. And as far as like numbers being down is what I mean. I mean, obviously kids are going to the parks, but
sure.
And I believe it was on their episode. They were talking about that. And
yeah,
I never really thought about it. I never put two and two together on that. I just thought, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. They're doing that. And I thought, how sad.
Well, I'll use myself an example. When I was a kid, we went every summer, we would go to Yellowstone and we would fish our way to Yellowstone. We'd fish a couple days in Yellowstone, and then we'd fish our way home. And I've lived in Washington all my life, and I can honestly not remember going to Mount Rainier or even thinking about it in all that time. I've still never been to Crater Lake. And, wow. These are things that, you would expect somebody who lives here would have done these things. But I think that there are a lot of people, a lot of kids who don't get there partially because – they're doing other stuff. I mean, heck, my kids are so oversubscribed. It's silly, but we have to make time for that. And I think that parents need to recognize that it's not as hard as maybe they're worried it's going to be to get out there. I mean, even just driving to Paradise with your kids in June and letting them play in the snow is going to make a memory for a lifetime. They're like, "Wow, I played in the snow in June. How crazy is that?" And that's the sort of thing that needs to be done more. I think it doesn't have to be the epic death march or, an overnight trip where you have to spend money on permits or you have to spend money on, gear or anything like that. And I guess one of the nice things is that the last couple times I have been up at around Paradise, it has been absolutely packed with people who are clearly not there for some epic adventure. They're not going to Camp Muir. They're not going to go, camp on Mazama Ridge in a snowstorm or something like that. They're just there to see the mountain and play in the snow. And I love seeing that and knowing that, that's going to sink in. And when it comes time for maybe someday the budgets to be increased for the parks, or it's going to be, somebody's going to suggest, hey, let's put a big sign up on top of Mount Rainier advertising something. These are the people that are going to stand up and say, no, hold on right there.
Yep. That's like, Iris Spring. I mean, that was those guys, that was their whole thing.
Yep.
Let's get people out there to get them on board for keeping this place looking nice. So,
yeah.
All right, last question. If you could hike or climb with any one person, alive or not, who would you hike with and why?
Wow, I think that I get a chance to hike with my kids all the time, so I'm not going to say them. I think that I would love if my dad actually wanted to hike to go fishing more, because it's not his thing. You know, when we go fishing, we tend to do something where we can drive right up to a lake or to a river, or, you know, we've used guide services in the past. But I think that there are so many amazing places to fish that are just far enough out that if you're not hiking regularly, you're not going to be able to get there. And you know, I would extend that even to, you know, to snowshoeing, right? We are ambassadors for Tubbs Snowshoes. So, I try to get people out on snowshoes all the time, and I'd love for him to want to go out and, you know, it's those sorts of adventures that I think would be really cool to do with him. And then I'll cheat and I'll throw one more in, because my maternal grandfather grew up back east, and ever since, you know, from when I knew him, and probably from well before I was born, he always walked with a cane, and wasn't able to really go out and do any adventurous types of things. But he would tell stories of when he would go out as a kid, and you know, they'd run up and down the mountains and do all that sort of stuff. And so I think it'd be really cool to have an opportunity, or to have had an opportunity to adventure with him when he was in shape to go and do that.
Yeah, that's interesting. I got a chance to hang out with one really cool dude. He was a maternal grandfather of mine also. And Ken Davis grew up in Chelan. And back in the, I want to say 20s or 30s, and he would ride his motorcycle to Stehekin, you know, his like off-road dirt bike back then, you know. And man, I thought, how cool would it be to experience that area with him? You know, same kind of thing. That's cool.
Oh, yeah.
Well, hey, thanks for coming on the Cascade Hiker Podcast.
Hey, it's been a lot of fun. I feel bad I didn't get to plug all the stuff that I needed to plug, so I'll throw in some plugs right now. Go buy Deuter backpacks, the best backpacks there are. We do a lot of work with Deuter and Tubbs Snowshoes and Woolex wool gear, and then Turbo Pup meal bars for dogs. So there, I've done my ambassadorial duty, but all those things are stuff that we use on a very regular basis and really appreciate.
Well, that's cool, and we'll send people over to your website, too, to go check that stuff out.
Cool. Thank you much.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to the show. Go on back to CascadeHikerPodcast.com and, you know, leave me a comment. Tell me what you thought. That's how I know everything's going good, or maybe some things are going bad. But maybe you have some ideas there. And if you have some more questions for any of our guests, leave a comment under their episode, and maybe we can get them back on and answer some quick questions there. You can send me an email if you don't want to leave a comment. It's ibighiker@gmail, ibighiker@gmail. Give my Facebook page a like, North Cascade Hiker. Follow me on Twitter, @N_CascadeHiking. That's @N_CascadeHiking. I try to give you guys multiple ways to get a hold of me. Give me some comments on the show, and maybe some ideas for some guests. Thanks again for listening to the show. Here's a little bit more of that Whiskey Fever track, Tall Grass.
Down in the tall grass, playing mandolin in a white dress. I come running when I hear that song. It could never be wrong, it could never be wrong. Where you wanna run, baby, I'll run too. I would leave this world for a beautiful girl if I could just